Hot. 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 Bring the heat.
And now, your host, Pat Rulo.
Welcome to Speak Up Talk Radio. I am your hostess, Pat Rulo, where each week I share talk-worthy topics that seldom see the light of day. As a leader in the patient safety world, I now extend my advocacy to include what many consider to be fringe topics. Topics that affect our health, our lives, our futures, and our sanity. So enjoy the next few minutes as I entice you to join me to become the voice for informed choice. I am your hostess, Pat Rulo, always bringing you the best of the best when it comes to our guests. And today is no exception. Let me introduce him right now. David O. Carpenter, MD, is a public health physician, educated at Harvard Medical School. His current title is Director of the Institute for Health and the Environment at the University of Albany and Professor of Environmental Health Sciences within the School of Public Health. David served as the Executive Secretary to the New York State Power Lines Project in the 1980s, a program of research that showed children living in homes with elevated magnetic fields coming from power lines suffered from an increased risk of developing leukemia. After this, he became the spokesperson on electromagnetic field issues and has published several reviews on the subject and has edited two books. You may recognize David Carpenter's name, as he is a co-editor and a contributing author of the BioInitiative Report, which you can find at bioinitiative.org. This report documents the negative health effects and public health conclusions about impacts of electromagnetic radiation and radio frequencies. The public health chapter from this report was subsequently published in a peer-reviewed journal. In addition, in 2009, he was invited to present to the President's Cancer Panel on the subject of power line and radio frequency fields in cancer and has testified on this issue before the United States House of Representatives. So much more. And it is an honor and a pleasure to speak with you today. So welcome to the show, David.
Thank you very much.
All right, we're going to dig right in. By now, most of our listeners recognize that these man-made frequencies are damaging to our health. However, the media promotes the notion that the scientific studies are inconsistent and inconclusive and that wireless everything is perfectly safe. So the question we want to start out with today is why the struggle to expose the truth?
Well, I think there are multiple reasons. In the first place, most people enjoy the convenience of wireless technology. We like our electricity, and we don't really want to think of there being dangers associated with them. You also have a very powerful industry that makes a lot of money by promoting new devices that use wireless technology, and they certainly don't want their product declared dangerous. The issue is that regulation is normally done at the level of the political entities that work for governments, international, federal, state, and politicians depend on contributions from industry to keep their campaigns alive. And most citizens don't either contribute very much or have much influence. And so there's a disincentive for what I think is really critical here, that there be political acknowledgement by agencies that have regulatory responsibility that, yes, these are very convenient technologies, but in excess they pose significant health hazards. When I presented at the President's Cancer Panel, there was also a representative from the National Cancer Institute that tried to contradict everything I said. Now, in fact, we really didn't contradict each other. We described the evidence as it is, that in the case of power line fields, there is a significant body of evidence that consistently shows elevations in rates of childhood leukemia if children live in homes with high magnetic fields coming from the household electricity, that there is a consistent finding of elevated adult leukemia and less confident brain cancer in adults that work in occupations where they're exposed to elevated magnetic fields, and that in the case of the radio frequency fields, there's strong evidence that individuals that hold cell phones to the ear and use them intensively for long periods of time, usually 10 years or more, have an elevated risk of brain cancer. The explanations for people discounting this evidence, they're really two forms. One is that you don't have clear evidence that exposure to electromagnetic fields causes cancer in animals. And that's true. I agree that there is no strong evidence that these fields cause cancer in animals. But what the hell? We have evidence that they do in people. And there is a variety of evidence that shows that animal bodies, because of their size and the fact they're four-legged, they don't respond to electromagnetic fields in the same way people do. So I dismiss that as being really irrelevant. Then the second reason that the National Cancer Institute and other bodies minimize the significance of the observations is that we do not know exactly what the mechanism is whereby these relatively low-energy fields can cause cancer. But again, that argument doesn't hold any water. We don't know the mechanism whereby arsenic causes cancer. We don't know why dioxins cause cancer. We know a lot about different changes that occur when someone is exposed to those substances. We know a lot about the changes that occur in the human body when someone is exposed to electromagnetic fields. And it's certainly true that these are probably not directly mutagenic carcinogens, like some things like ionizing radiation is. But we accept these other chemical exposures as being known human carcinogens, and yet, because of the extraneous influences, most national and international bodies do not come out strongly saying that excessive exposure to electromagnetic fields poses risks to human health. It's very reminiscent of what happened with cigarette smoking and lung cancer ages ago. In the 1930s, the bad Nazis provided absolutely definitive evidence that smoking caused lung cancer. In the U.S., nothing was done to warn people about the dangers of smoking until, the mid-60s. And part of the reason was that a lot of the physicians in the American Medical Association, a lot of the faculty at the National Cancer Institute, number one, they all smoked. Number two, many of them had money in the industry, and they didn't want to believe it. But it does take a long period of time. The issue on the electromagnetic fields, and I'm certainly not someone that says we have the answer to every question. We do not. There are a lot of things that need to be understood better. But I also come at the question from a public health point of view, and that's somewhat different from some of these other people's perspectives. The United Nations at the Rio conference a number of years ago developed the concept of the precautionary principle. And the precautionary principle basically says when you have evidence for human harm, but it's not 100% complete, which rarely is anything 100% complete in medicine, you don't wait till you can count all the bodies before you take reasonable steps to reduce exposure. And I see this as being very relevant to the issue of Wi-Fi in schools, of use of cell phones, of smart meters, of even household electricity. Clearly, everyone is exposed. You know, if you don't have Wi-Fi in your house and you don't have a cell phone, you're still exposed to radio frequency radiation because there's a cell tower on every street corner. So we are all exposed. And when you do studies, there's no unexposed population. What we can do is to compare the health of people that are more exposed to the people that are less exposed. And when we do that, we find that the people that are more exposed have more of a variety of diseases, especially cancer.
Thinking about smart meters, because there is a serious difference between an exposure which an individual chooses to accept, such as deciding to use a cell phone or Wi-Fi, and one that is forced on people, such as the smart meter. So again, talking about exposure, those that do recognize the precautionary principle were unable to even follow that idea because now we've got mandatory radiation coming from our smart meters on our homes. How do we take care of that?
That is a very real problem, and the smart meter battle is being fought all over the world right now. The issue is a very real one, that it's one thing to knowingly accept a risk. For example, almost every smoker knows that smoking is dangerous. Society usually says that it's less acceptable to be exposed to a hazard that you don't agree to than one that you choose to be exposed to. But at the same time, both with initiatives from our federal government and from many state governments, or at least acquiescence to the will of the communications industry, smart meters are being put on people's homes without their permission. Now, this is just the tip of the iceberg, because at the same time, appliance manufacturers are putting these ZB drives in almost every appliance that you have in your home, your dishwasher, your refrigerator, your clothes dryer. And these are devices that are going to communicate to the smart meter when they're activated, and apparently they're not activated yet, but they will communicate to the smart meter that will allow somebody in the utility to know how much electricity your clothes dryer is using. And at some point in time, rates are going to be set so that it costs more to dry your clothes at 6 in the afternoon than it does at 3 in the morning. And that the utility will have the power to prevent you from activating your clothes dryer if there's a run on electricity and danger of shortages. What's going to happen when this is fully activated is that people's kitchen, people's laundry room are going to be hotbeds of radio frequency radiation exposure, and that this is going to also be done without the permission of the individual. When you have evidence for harm, but you still want to use something that's good, then use common sense. Reduce your exposure to the degree you can without totally disrupting your lifestyle, without undergoing enormous expense. And in the case of both power line and radio frequency radiation, there's so many very straightforward and not very disruptive things you can do. Use, if you're going to use your cell phone, and everybody values their cell phone, use a wired earpiece and don't hold the cell phone on your body. You don't have to have the cell phone far removed from your body to have almost no exposure from the radio frequency radiation coming from the cell phone. Now, you're still going to get the radiation coming from the cell tower, from Wi-Fi if it's around, from smart meters if you're near a smart meter, but you can reduce your exposure to the radio frequency radiation. And this leads me to some discussion about Wi-Fi in schools. You know, every kid should have access to the internet. It's incredibly important. And it's important that kids use that tool for learning. But you don't have to have a wireless connection to have all the access to the internet that anyone would want. A wired computer does not generate radio frequency radiation. Now, if you have a wireless computer classroom, which many schools have now, you are going to have, let's say you have 20 students in a room, you have one massive router at the top of the room, each of the laptops is computing with the router, you're going to have a hotbed of radio frequency radiation. The cancers that develop from exposure to radio frequency radiation, for that matter to power line radiation, have a long latency. Usually brain cancer is known to have a latency of 20 or 30 years from exposure to things like ionizing radiation. And those children are not going to be developing brain cancer in the 2 or 3 years that they're sitting in a classroom that has Wi-Fi computer facilities. What's going to happen 20 years from now? We are seeing elevations in rates of brain cancer, but all this exposure hasn't been around very long. The elevations in brain cancer seen in cell phone users for adults, you only really see the elevation after about 10 years of use. Now, for children, it appears to be a shorter period of time than that. It appears that the younger brain is more vulnerable than the older brain, which is younger people are more vulnerable to a variety of toxic insults than older people are, just because their bodies are growing and developing. You know, you don't have to have a Wi-Fi classroom. You can have a wired classroom. It may not be as flexible, but in the long term, it's going to be much safer. You don't have to have a wired smart meter. You can have a smart meter, a wireless smart meter, I meant. You can have a wired smart meter that's going to communicate with the utility, but it's not going to generate excessive radio frequency radiation.
My concern is all of this secondhand exposure, though. So you try to employ the precautionary principle and prudent avoidance in your daily life, but you go to the doctor's office, you go to the hospital, you go to the library, you go shopping. I mean, as soon as you leave your home, you are completely bombarded. So yeah, while the precautionary principle and prudent avoidance is at least a start, for me, the irritation is this mandatory exposure that we can't get away from.
Well, you're absolutely right. Now, let's talk a little bit about electrohypersensitivity, because there are some people that are unusually sensitive to these fields, both the power line field and the radio frequency field. And those people, they're the canaries in the coal mine, because those people become ill when they're in the presence of these electromagnetic fields. And some of these people are so very sensitive that they basically can't even live in cities. We have cell towers on just about every tall building. You know, to find a place in the whole country where there isn't a cell tower, if you can use your cell phone, there's a cell tower that's radiating radio frequency radiation. There is growing evidence that the percentage of the population that have these syndromes of hypersensitivity is increasing. And I've had several occasions to meet people and talk with people who had a high exposure event that left them for many years after that very sensitive to electromagnetic fields. The symptoms are headaches, nausea, vomiting, a sense of fatigue, a sense of mental disability. They just don't feel as bright as they were. They have no energy. They have ringing in the ears. And some people have estimated that with this increasing exposure that you can't avoid, that percentage of the population is going to grow. So I totally agree with the concern that electromagnetic fields are so prominent in our environment that it's almost impossible to escape them completely. And we don't know what those background, even if you take all the precautions you can in your own life, we don't know the degree to which those background exposures you can't control contribute to ill health. But it is a concern.
Well, David, there's so much more that I would like to share with our listeners today, but we simply are running out of time.
Now, is there any place our listeners can find out more about you that you'd like to share?
Well, I have a website. It has a lot of EMF information on it. It's www.albany.edu/IHE for Institute for Health and the Environment. Certainly the Bioinitiative Report has continued new information. There's some new analyses, and that's www.bioinitiative.org.
We want to thank you so much for sharing your expertise with our listeners. Thank you.
My pleasure. Thank you, and best of luck to me.
I'm here with disturbing news about our favorite gadgets, cell phones, tablets, Wi-Fi, etc. Putting it bluntly, they are damaging the living cells in our bodies and killing many of us prematurely. I'm Dr. Martin Blank from the Department of Physiology and Cellular Biophysics at Columbia University. Before Edison's light bulb, there was very little electromagnetic radiation in our environment. The levels today are very many times higher than natural background levels and are growing rapidly because of all the new devices that emit this radiation. An example that a lot of us have in our pockets right now is the cell phone. One study shows that as cell phone usage has spread widely, the incidence of fatal brain cancer in younger people has more than tripled. We are putting cellular antennas on residential buildings and on top of hospitals where people are trying to get well. Wireless utility meters and cell towers are blanketing our neighborhoods with radiation. Future generations, our children, are at risk. The World Health Organization and international standard-setting bodies are not acting to protect the public's health and well-being. We are really all part of a large biological experiment without our informed consent. To protect our children, ourselves, and our ecosystem, we must reduce exposure by establishing more protective guidelines.
As you just heard from quite the expert, Dr. Martin Blank, a previous guest on this show, the radio frequencies emitted from cell phones, baby monitors, cordless phones, smart meters are known to cause health problems. Therefore, I suggest you do everything you can to avoid any prolonged contact with any device that emits this type of microwave radiation. Because radio frequencies are invisible, you must own a detection meter to measure the levels of radiation emitted not only from your or your neighbor's smart meter, but also from cell towers in your neighborhood, stealth cell antennas hidden within flagpoles, in church steeples, gas station signs, wireless in libraries, stores, coffee shops, hotels, hospitals, and from cell phones and secondhand phone. I firmly believe that everyone should own a small handheld meter that can detect these dangerous frequencies. So with that, I've done the research for you and now offer EMF meters, RF meters, and other detection, measurement, and shielding devices through a company called Safe Living Technologies. They have an extensive selection of useful items that range from entry level to professional level, and I personally own what I'm asking you to own. You can find them at our website, speakupandstayalive.com, speakupandstayalive.com. There you will see a picture of a reasonably priced meter. I think it's about $140 or less, and there's no tax. Plus, I offer a free gift with every purchase, a free copy of my book, You Simply Cannot Prevent That Which You Don't Measure. So here's a way to basically make the invisible visible. Just like your body, your organs, and ultimately your health cannot survive in a smoke-filled room, neither can you survive in an environment filled with electrosmog. So get yourself a meter. Buy them as gifts. They are soon to become a mainstream necessity in order to survive in this world filled with unprecedented levels of life-diminishing man-made frequencies. Go to speakupandstayalive.com. I wouldn't waste your time or mine talking about this if it was not important to your health and your future.
In your face, all over the place. We're online 24/7. 24/7. You're listening to the hottest.
SpeakUpAndStayAlive.com. That's SpeakUpAndStayAlive.com.
The lone wolf cries. A new study shows that long-term use of mobile and cordless phones tripled the risk for the most common type of brain cancer, glioma. Patients who began wireless phone use before the age of 20 had the highest risk. The electromagnetic fields emanating from wireless phones easily penetrate children and adolescents' skulls because the brain is still developing up until age 20. The study says physicians should warn their patients of this risk. And I, the lone wolf, ask, and who will look after the patient when all of the healthcare providers fall ill due to the extreme use of wireless within hospitals? Have you ever checked out the amount of cell antennas located on the roof of every hospital? A hospital is not a place to heal, nor is it a safe place for doctors or nurses. This is scary stuff, and I have yet to hear anyone talk about this from the health provider's side. Electromagnetic sensitivity is a recognized condition. Despite the fact that ever greater numbers of people are suffering from electromagnetic sensitivity, EMS, there are still relatively few mainstream medical doctors or medical facilities who are aware of this disease. Both scientific literature and clinical research show that EMS features a wide variety of symptoms, including chronic headaches, dizziness, sleep disorders, mind fog, digestive disorders, depression, anxiety. People with EMS experience any combination of these symptoms and more when they are exposed to electromagnetic fields emitted by wireless devices such as cell phones, cell towers, and routers, also by electricity, appliances, power lines. I read articles that say healthcare practitioners need to better understand EMS so that they can help their patients prevent and manage their symptoms. The public needs to know how to protect themselves from the broad range of health impacts that electromagnetic fields have on their minds and bodies. But as these articles implore doctors to become aware, why isn't anyone cautioning them about the negative health hazards that surely affect healthcare providers, doctors, nurses, the staff? Are they somehow immune to this? Well, I don't think so. The simple fact is this. Everyone is affected by EMFs, electromagnetic fields, and those with stronger immune systems will simply begin having these EH symptoms at a later date, as it can take a while for the sensitivity to emerge, often after 3, 4, 5 years of 24/7 exposure to EMFs. Well, this sensitivity can be initiated by some trigger, or by some incident that ultimately damages the bioelectrochemical communications within the body, which leads to permanent sensitivity. And hospital workers spend most of their days and nights working in a sea of radiation, given off not only by hospital equipment such as MRI systems, electromagnetic nerve stimulators, electrosurgical units, and other devices for medical treatment, but also from the Wi-Fi in the building, computers in every room, iPads, cell phones, cordless phones. Electrosensitivity can also be triggered by exposure to a new electronic device. And they can further cause damage by opening the blood-brain barrier, causing toxins to flow through the protective barrier. There may also be environmental factors that contribute to this sensitivity, such as having amalgam fillings, which we talked about, dental fillings on a previous show, metal implants, or a retention of heavy metals, thanks to the constant chemtrailing of our skies, another program we had recently, or due to poor nutrition, continuous exposure to EMFs by living near power lines or cell towers, or spending a lot of time on the cell and cordless phones or computers when at home. There are numerous studies linking electromagnetic sensitivity and other diseases to living near or with EMF-producing technology continuously for a number of years, and I'm not making this up. For example, cell towers. There are many studies correlating cell towers with a variety of diseases. One conducted in 2003 in France found that people living within about a quarter of a mile of cell antennas reported the following disorders: fatigue, sleep disturbances, headaches, difficulty concentrating, depression, memory loss, visual disruptions, irritability, hearing disruptions, skin problems, cardiovascular disorders, dizziness, and the list goes on and on. Cell phones. Cell phone usage has increased exponentially over the last few years, and so have the studies, finding an important link to ES symptoms and other serious diseases. There are studies in particular on headaches, such as one by A.H. Frey, on which he found that headaches are caused when EMFs damage the blood-brain barrier, and that the dopamine-opiate systems of the brain are also affected by EMFs, causing headaches. Bottom line, people aren't born with this condition. It develops after a period of exposure, after which the body seems to reach a tipping point over the edge into electrosensitivity. Now, I've heard from many patients who have sensitivity, and here's what typically happens when a person experiencing symptoms from this insidious microwave radiation goes to the doctor. These electrosensitive folks face denial and sneers from the medical establishment, with notes in their charts that suggest they are delusional. And these patients find themselves sent home with antidepressants or other non-effective drugs that lead to unwanted side effects, that lead to more drugs. And there we go. So my question is, my lone wolf question is, what are these doctors and nurses doing for themselves when they experience such symptoms? Do they question the negative environment in which they work? Or are they popping pills to mask the problem they refuse to recognize? Here's a little something that a listener sent to me. Now, I don't know if she wrote this or found it online, but it pretty much sums things up nicely. She says, "Pat, to experience disturbed energy in all its glorious spectrum, visit a hospital. Electromagnetic field radiation in mega doses plus disease, negative emotions, and human suffering in all its forms, a matrix hard to cope with. In a hospital bed with a broken ankle and complications after surgery, I pondered on this as I lay over a motor giving me blasts of EMF as the nurse hired and lowered my electric bed. This, on top of x-rays and probably doses of EMF from the machine that they strapped to my arm to check my vital signs to see if I'm still alive. That, of course, is the only beginning in a high-tech, all-electric health facility. I'm here to get well, I thought, and in fact, they are killing me. Bit of an overreaction, I know, but in all reality, it wasn't speeding up my recovery. Then there were my roommates with their assortment of medical conditions, dis-ease in energetic terms, accompanied by all the raw emotions attached to them, and their visitors in all their states of human condition, and wowee, an energetic mix of gigantic proportions. And after side effects from painkillers, We won't go there except to say that they play havoc with the normal functioning of the digestive system in all its unspeakable entirety. When I tried to talk to some of my healthcare providers about the health risks associated with wireless radiation within the hospital setting, I found that the medical profession is very single-minded on the whole. Eventually, though, EMF will be as big a taboo as smoking. Well, now this is me talking, and I ask, what about the industrial-strength wireless cell boosters on top of hospitals? I take my radiation measuring meter with me to every doctor appointment or hospital when I accompany my mom, and I have to say, the readings are in the severe red zone. Not only are these hospitals responsible for radiating those in the building below, but what about the people in the buildings surrounding them? I don't know if anyone has read the fine print, but those that erect cell towers on their properties, and I would imagine the same goes for those found on buildings, they are the ones who assume all liability. Not the cellular companies. But that's another issue. Now, it's not necessarily the high readings that are the biggest problem, but constant low levels are even more hazardous to a person's health. Epidemiologists at the University of North Carolina in Chapel Hill explain the association between extremely low-frequency EMFs and suicide via the melatonin connection. They say, based on observations that these exposures alter the daily rhythm of the pineal gland, which regulates melatonin production, as well as the role of melatonin in depression, and depression as an important risk factor for suicidal behavior, they say suicide seems a potential consequence of exposure to EMFs. And there's more. Dozens of studies, including the one in occupational and environmental medicine, suggests that even low levels of EMFs depress the body's production of melatonin, the hormone that controls the sleep-wake cycle. German research finds that people with low melatonin levels report depression, brain fog, exhaustion, and agitation, symptoms of electrosensitivity. It's called the Dracula hormone because its production peaks at night. Melatonin can increase the effectiveness of the body's immune cells, helping to prevent disease, including cancer. This hormone just doesn't help you sleep. It can potentially save your life, particularly if you're exposed to EMFs. And that's why I always implore you to turn off your wireless router at night. Keep the cell phones, chargers, decked cordless phones, and baby monitors out of the bedroom at night. But then, what about a hospital stay? You can't get away from the radiation there at night. And what about doctors, nurses, the healthcare staff? Where and how are they sleeping at night? In a safe zone? I don't think so. A surprising number and a variety of careers are putting people at risk today due to this ever-increasing exposure to antenna, cell and cordless phones, digital and electronic equipment, faulty wiring, microwaves, power lines, satellite, and wireless. Comparing job histories of people with rare brain tumors called gliomas and cancer-free controls in the San Francisco Bay Area, a study in the Journal of Occupation and Environmental Medicine noted twofold or higher elevated risks for firefighters and physicians. The melatonin connection is obviously an important link in all of this. The loss of melatonin production, when combined with sleep deprivation that many hospital workers experience, further combined with high levels of EMF found in the hospital, sounds like a recipe for a sick bunch of healthcare workers. Not exactly bright-eyed and bushy-tailed, ready to cut into your heart. Yet attend any medical conference, or heck, even do a search online, and all you hear about is how smart technology is revolutionizing healthcare, wireless changing U.S. healthcare, how can Wi-Fi transform the healthcare sector, the newest app to measure your heart rate, while meantime, it's radiating you to death. Yes, it's changing healthcare, all right. It's killing everyone. So I ask, as someone looking out for the welfare of our medical professionals, where's OSHA, the Occupational Safety and Health Administration? OSHA recognizes that hospital workers face serious hazards, including lifting and moving patients, workplace violence, exposures to chemicals and hazardous drugs, slipping and falling, exposures to infectious diseases and needle sticks? What about this silent but deadly technology that everyone is embracing? And where's the FDA, the Food and Drug Administration, that ensures medical devices are safe? And where's the FCC, the Federal Communications Commission, which often works closely with the FDA and has jurisdiction over equipment that uses radio frequencies? Where is everybody? And why am I one of the only few lone wolves out there howling about this? We talk about surviving a hospital stay on this program. How are we, patients, going to survive if our healthcare providers are drinking the Kool-Aid and making themselves sick in the process? I'm asking every patient and healthcare provider to take heed. The research has been done for years now, and the findings are covered up by industry, business, government, in the name of money. These man-made frequencies are just that, made by man. They are not natural. We were not born to thrive and survive in an environment with these constant levels. We are being duped. We are being fascinated, like the pack rats who run off with a shiny bit of scrap, only to drop it when the next bright piece of trash catches his eye and then drags the offending pretties into its den. So are we, enamored with glittery technology as we drag it all home, into our schools, our hospitals, and silently suffer the consequences of our own failings. Our failings to see past the glitter, that we are merely puppets, pawns in the great game of greed. Pack rats, too consumed by the need to grab the next shiny object, failing to hear the lone wolf who precedes imminent doom with her cry.
Hi there, this is Mrs. Green, and I would love for you to become a part of my world. Mrs. Green's World is an engaged international community and a global movement of ideas and action made up of people who truly care about their own health and the health of this great planet of ours. In Mrs. Green's World, we don't tell you what to think, we just want you to. Please visit my website at mrsgreensworld.com and become a part of our world.
Having elderly parents like this is like having two-year-olds with driver's licenses, right? Number one.
You really learn what you're capable of.
Your assumptions are going to be turned somewhat upside down.
It's an issue that nobody wants to talk about.
What you're doing and the stories that you're sharing with everyone are fantastic.
Hi, I'm Gianna Panaritis, host of the AgeWise podcast. Listen to a brand new episode each week at speakuptalkradio.com. To learn more about the show, go to agewyz.com.
Well, there you have it. Lots to think about and plenty to speak up about. I hope that as you listen to this program each week, you make a conscious decision to speak up about those things that may seem small, may not affect you right now, but somewhere in your heart and in your mind, you sense are not right. We can make changes, but not through silence. So join me and be a voice of reason. All right, we are out of time, but never out of topics. So be sure to come back next week. Same time, same place, but never the same information. Until then, I hope you have a healthy and a happy week. I am Pat Rulo, and I am the voice for informed choice. Whether looking to sell your home at top market value or searching for your dream home at a competitive price, the McCaskey team can help. As the top producing real estate team in Geauga County and Northeast Ohio, the McCaskey team knows what it takes to guide you through the home buying and selling process. How do I know this? They sold my mom's home in less than a week, so I have firsthand experience. They are a part of RE/MAX Traditions, so give my friends, Dan or Terry, the opportunity to help you too. They're located on Chardon Square at 139 Main Street. Give them a call, 440-773-5542. That is 440-773-5542. Or visit their website, McCaskeyTeam.com. That's McCaskeyTeam.com. McCaskeyTeam.com.